remember to get these on. And we've got a mouse living up here.
Oh, yeah. Did he eat something?
No, droppings.
Oh.
So, it's something to be aware of. Okay. So, the Buddha is talking about these practitioners that they have all these great qualities, going back to that first portion that we recited. And he says they've accomplished these things by mastering the five directions, and then above and the below, and so on and so forth. And this is actually very, very important for those that want to really authentically practice the Dharma in the way that it's intended. The one thing that the Buddha was very, very magnificent in doing was that he was very scientific or very detailed about his approach to everything. And this is rather important, because the one thing that the Buddha did not want to do, which kind of seems contradictory to a lot of people, is the Buddha did not want us to make up our own system. And this is actually very, very important, because as I was just kind of saying a moment ago, that, you know, that concept of I'm a horribly sick person, right? And I'm only going to go to the hospital that shares my views of how to deal with my ailment, even though I don't understand anything about medicine or healing. And so we run off to quacks and witch doctors and things like that, and we say, well, this guy, you know, he says that if you eat a pound of strawberries a day, it will, you know, reverse my psoriasis, or whatever it is that your gout, or who knows. And you think, well, that's exactly what I would think, because, you know, the old saying is, eat a pound of strawberries and you don't need a doctor, right? Has anybody heard that before? No, because it's not a real saying, but you get the point. We're the ones that are not enlightened. So when we go after teachers from the perspective that we think we know, well, if we think we know, why are we going to a teacher? If you know how to fix yourself, fix yourself. If that's not working, go to the teacher, but don't drag your quack doctor, you know, home remedy with you. You need to find somebody that actually is going to be able to work. And so when you go to a real doctor and you tell them, yeah, so I'm on this regimen of eating a pound of strawberries a day, because that's going to clear all this up. And the doctor's going, but is it? And you go, well, of course. And the doctor says, so you were much worse before this? And you say, well, no, over the last couple of months, it's getting worse. And the doctor goes, so the pound of strawberries a day is working or is not working? And you go, oh no, it is. And he says, okay, so it, I'm just trying to clarify, it is working in that you're getting worse than you were. And you say, yes, but I know it is working. And this is what it sounds like. I mean, it really does. In as a Dharma teacher for quite some time now, you hear some of the some of the funniest stuff. You ask people, you know, so are you meditating on a daily basis? No, I don't do that kind of thing. Well, why not? Well, I don't really have to. Oh. And why don't you have to? Well, because that doesn't really work for me. You know what I think works for me is drinking a quart of milk every day when it's gone slightly sour. And I say, okay, and so why exactly are you coming to the Dharma Center now? Well, I'm having anger issues. And the milk's helping with this? Well, of course it's helping. But, you know, I have these, like, wild outbursts that I can't control. And then you say, are you sure it's helping? And they go, no, it is. No, really. And see, most physicians, real physicians, are trained in a thing called science. Science is based on observation, which means for them to accept the idea that a treatment is working, there needs to be observable proof that it is. So the guy's saying, no, it's getting worse over the last couple months. And the doctor says, okay, but even though it's getting worse, eating the pound of strawberries is making it go away. You see, that's not scientific. That's like saying, I'm putting out the fire on my couch, even though my couch is becoming more engulfed by the moment. Then are you actually putting out the fire or not? So we have a really wacky way of approaching Dharma. We tend to think that we can just buy a book. Hey, that book tells me everything I need to know. I'm going to do it myself. How many of you fix your own car when there's a problem with it? Anyone? Come on, I know there's a mechanic out there, no? No one.
Minor things.
Minor thing. No, I'm not talking about changing out your head gasket and, like, you know, remilling your brakes and all that kind of... Anybody do that? Anyone? How many of you would be absolutely comfortable doing that because you went on Amazon and bought the manual on how to repair your car? Anyone? But that's just a car. Why are you so confident to do this with yourself? The car at some point is just going to rust out and disappear. You're going to get karmic retribution. Life after life after life after life. Why would you be careless like that? And the Buddha recognized this. And the Buddha was all about those four immeasurables, but in a lasting way, not momentarily. And in a lasting way, he realized, okay, people need some structure, because without structure, they just go crazy. And you've probably had the experience of finding something really fantastic. You do it once or twice, it's really great, and then you try to repeat the process over and over and over, and you realize that you're like a Xerox machine. When you keep making photocopies of a photocopy, eventually it just turns to mush. If you haven't tried it, well, I guess nobody does photocopies anymore. But when I was a kid, you know, we'd like be doing flyers for our band. Oh, come see our band. And so you would take a copy, Xerox it, and then somebody else would Xerox a copy, and by the end of it, it's just pixelated mess. It can't duplicate itself more than just a few times before it falls apart. And that's what happens when we attempt to buy a book and be self-trained. So the Buddha said, here's a fantastic system. I'm going to lay this all out systematically. And I'm going to ordain people so that they can kind of be our guides. And they can kind of, you know, help us along this path to make sure that our adjustment isn't getting wonky. Now, I told you guys earlier, if you just do refuge in the four immeasurables, that's it. And that's absolutely true. But there is a scientific way to do the four immeasurables. In the exact same way when you buy a car, they tell you, look, if you change the oil regularly and you do this basic maintenance, your car's going to run for a very, very long time. And how many of us are notoriously known to reject that? You know, the little sticker says, hey, at 29.5433, change your oil. And you look and it's like 85.90, 8.7, and you still haven't gone in to change it. And you wonder why you get this little red light that pops on all the time that says check engine, check oil. You go, what the hell is that for? And then one day you turn it on and it doesn't come on and you go, oh look, it's fixed. Or you look at your checkbook and you go, yeah, I don't have the money for that right now. And then you go outside and you get down on one knee and you put your face really, really close to the left headlight and you say, all right, here's the deal. I know you want some maintenance. I don't really have the money for that right now, so I need you to just fix yourself for a little bit. You know, have some hot chicken soup or something. I'll put a blanket on you, keep you warm, but you're just going to have to get through this because I can't afford to take you to the doctor right now. Are we good? And of course, the car doesn't say anything because it's a machine. And you go, all right, since we have an understanding, you're not going to continue to decay while I abuse you until I feel like I have money to afford to take you in. How many people have done something like that? Yeah. People do it all the time. Your car needs servicing and you put it off because you got all your excuses on why. And you just think that the car is going to agree to that. Like it's a person who's going to go, okay, yeah, well, that's fine. I'll just use some over-the-counter medication for a while until we can afford to go to the doctor. Cars don't do that. They tend to exponentially decay. They get worse faster over time. You see? The Dharma works in the same way. There's a system in place. That's called the Buddha Dharma. And the ordained Sangha is there to help guide you on that. They're basically the guys that can give you the proper oil change. Back in the day when you used to have to change out or regap your plugs and all that kind of stuff and filters and, you know, you can tell I'm a little older because back when I was growing up, we had carburetors and spark plugs, and you regapped them yourself and all this really cool stuff. Today, if you don't have a Mac, you can't work on the computer because, you know, it needs a special application to communicate with the car. Mine was, you just went in there with a couple screwdrivers, a socket set, and a hammer, and you could fix anything. So, this Dharma, the Buddha hints at it. He says they're trained in the directions. So everybody take a look at the flags in the Dharma Center. There are flags in there, right? So you notice there's five colors. And if you look at more than one set, you see that it keeps repeating the same exact pattern. It goes in the same color code all the way across. It goes blue, white, red, green, yellow. Blue, white, red, green, green, yellow. And it just keeps repeating the same pattern. It's because the flags are a compass. The white is east. The red is the west. The yellow is south. Green is north. And the blue is the center of the compass. And so when the Buddha says they are well trained in the directions, he's talking about they're trained in these flags. So each one of these flags represents a delusional poison, aka a sickness of ours. Trungpa Rinpoche used to call this your neurosis, your neurotic tendencies. And let's start with the first one in the east, which is the white flag. Now, some schools, they put the white one in the center and they put the blue one in the east. That doesn't really matter. My tradition, the white is in the east, so I'm sticking to that. The first white flag, white represents east, which is the direction of intelligence, wisdom. And wisdom is the medicine to overcome the illness of stupidity. That is, in fact, the Buddha's word, stupidity. So the first thing we have to train in, the first of all of it, is to train to remove our ignorance and replace it with the medication that clears that and allows us to have wisdom, because when our mind is healthy, we have a wise mind and not an ignorant mind. What is it that we are ignorant of? That's an excellent question. So the student that asked that, that's brilliant. It shows that you are really trying to learn Dharma and the inner meaning of it. Because this ignorance applies to only one thing specifically. It's not a general stupidity. It's a very specific ignorance of a specific law. It is being ignorant of nature itself. So what do we mean by that? It means understanding what we perceive as ourself and how we are perceiving the illusion in front of us. It is because we are ignorant of the actual true nature of ourself and other objects. We have no idea. We have a complete, total misunderstanding of our own existence and the existence of other objects. And so wisdom is to correct our view. So if you know anything about the Eightfold Path, the first one of the Eightfold Path is what? Is to have right
view.
View. See, it's tricky. All this stuff interweaves and hooks together and it's all connected. It's not just, you know, he talked about this and then changed his mind and went on. Nope, it's all connected. So we have to change our view of what we are and what outer things are. And outer things can mean your car. It can mean a person. It can mean an animal. It can mean the earth. It can mean the universe. It can mean the pencil that you're holding. It can mean your job. It can mean anything that you experience that you perceive to be separate, distinct, and other than the you. And it also means fixing the idea of you because you have a complete, total misunderstanding of that too. That's what he says. So that's our first spot that we work on. That's our first training. Once we start getting a little hint of all of that, it gets supported by moving to the south. So when we go south, we get the yellow flag, the yellow color. And so wisdom then gets combined with, anyone know yellow?
Generosity? No? Damn. I can't remember.
Knowledge. Wisdom turns into a functional knowledge. It goes from book smart, Ivy Tower kind of woo philosophy to a fundamental working, you know, hands-on thing. An applicable knowledge. And that knowledge overcomes a very, very specific thing, which is? Yeah, they translate it like that. That's a terrible word. Well, that's a horrible word, too. I almost said it. So we'll use the traditional way that it is said is that it overcomes arrogance. Arrogance means your knowledge is then applied to overcome your egomaniacal tendencies. See, once you begin to realize the reality of you and the reality of other, now you need to begin to tame it using this knowledge. So knowledge means you now know how to work on the car, so it's time to actually start working on it. You go in there and start taking off belts and loosening bolts and things like that, and you're doing things. And so as you're doing this stuff, you're overcoming the egomaniacal state, which we generally like to say you overcome your normal point of view. See, your whole life, you have a very specific point of view. And this knowledge works to overcome that, to undermine it. That's what it does, is it undermines your point of view, your default point of view. Which is really spectacular. I mean, that's like when there's magic happening. Really magical stuff starts to take place there. And once we get a little taste of that, we end up automatically turning again into the next direction, which is west, and that's the red flag. To put everyone on the spot again, anyone know what the red flag is?
Compassion.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's because you're all red flag practitioners. Yes, the red flag is compassion. We begin, because we have wisdom that's been turned into this knowledge, we start having a natural reaction. We begin to have this very organic thing happen to us, like a disease. We start getting compassionate. We have this very uncomfortable feeling called loving kindness that starts to bubble up in us. Really spooky things start happening because, you know, anytime you start getting compassionate and all full of love, that's really scary. This is kind of not okay. But this medicine of compassion is used to overcome a thing called passion. Or lust, but not in the Judeo-Christian sense. It has nothing to do with wanting to, you know, go have sex with things. That we're not talking about lust and passion like that. What we are talking about is our passion or lust. Passion's a very good word here, because we begin to overcome our passion for hating and hoarding. In other words, we begin to undermine, there's that word again, we begin to undermine our own desires we begin to undermine our hidden agendas. What is that word? Ulterior motive? Is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. You know, that's when you do something with a different twist than what you should be, right? I'm going to fix my car, not so that I can actually get to work, but so that I can come home, pack everything, and flee the state, and my creditors can't get me, right? That kind of thing. I'm going to Mexico. Like that song. Hey, Joe, where are you going to go? I'm going to run down to Mexico so they can't get me. Right? All you Hendrix fans out there. That's what's happening. You begin to undermine your own plans. You begin to undermine your little MOs. You begin to undermine your motives. Not other people's, yours. And if you haven't caught on yet, if we go back to the first flag, you've realized the nature of the quote-unquote ego, which I call the petty tyrant. You realize the nature of petty tyrant, and that is the thing that you begin to undermine. You undermine its arrogance, its point of view. You begin to undermine its passions, its sense of boundaries. You begin to undermine that. That's really what it is you undermine the sense of boundaries. This idea of, this is mine, and no, you can't play with it. It's not for you. Right? How many of us use that phrase on a daily basis? That's not for you. And we use it just like that, right? You'll be driving down the street, and then that one damn stoplight, every time you need to make a left, it turns red. And you're stuck at that light. It's a super long light. But that's not the uncomfortable part. The uncomfortable part is that guy with the cardboard sign that's always there who walks up to your window and looks in. And you roll down your window and you hold up your money bag and you say, it's not for you.
Weird
things. What?
I never want what I give them. I was like trying to give them an apple and they're like, I don't have any teeth. I don't.
Yeah, that's because you always like to do things according to you. That's another huge problem. But we do this with our Dharma practice all the time. You know, we wake up in the morning and we're tired and our shrine is sitting over there going, hey, can we get some lights and some incense and some stuff? And you say, my time is not for you, because I'm going to go shower for a half an hour and then like make tea for a half an hour. And then, oh my God, I'm late for work and get dressed and run, because my time is not for you, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, shrine. That's boundaries. But with this whole compassion and loving kindness aspect and the removal or the undermining of that, something begins to happen. And that moves us to the next flag, which is green and is in the north. Anyone know what green is for?
Would be the poison. If the poison is jealousy, is the wisdom generosity?
The wisdom is generosity. Okay. We think of green Tara. Generosity! And the generosity undermines our stinginess. It undermines our poverty mentality. They say that it undermines jealousy, but that's a horrible translation. It's not jealousy. It's actually this, or greediness. It's this, well, I guess greedy if you understand it in the fullest sense. But it's this stinginess. It's this poverty mind that we can't afford to give anything away. Especially, above all, our time and energy and our checkbook. As Americans, those are hell no's. Sometimes the checkbook, if they don't mind taking a very small amount. If you're cool with me giving you like $5 a year, we can work something out. I could probably do that. But screw you if you want more than that. Right? You know, we see you get these emails. Oh, big retreat. We're offering these huge teachings for like the next 4 days. Your food and everything's all included in it. It's $300, and you're like, $300? I'm not paying that for that. Who the hell would pay $300 for Dharma? I can get it for free just by going to the temple and never giving them a damn dime. See, we do that all the time. Or maybe we go, hey, I gave them $20 5 years ago. Screw that. I don't have to give them anything. And then we wonder, you know, how come they, like, keep moving or their building is falling apart or they're always like, yeah, we can't afford candles this week because, and then we go, can't afford candles? Then why don't you do what your parents did and get a job? Get a second one. Stop asking me for money. Can I have another teaching? We do that all the time. And then there's the whole effort thing. You know, we come in and we say to the teacher, look, I've been eating a pound of strawberries for a whole freaking year on a daily basis. And look, I've broken out in a giant full body rash now, and I think I might actually be allergic to strawberries now. This isn't working. And the teacher says, well, did you try that one practice that we talked about last year when you came in here? And you go, I don't have time for that. That's time stinginess. I've just been too tired. That's energy stinginess. I don't have that kind of time in the morning. Well, why not? I mean, if you start work at 8 in the morning, how do you not have time? Well, because I get up at 7:45. Well, why do you get up at 7:45? Well, because I got to sleep 15 hours. Well, didn't you train to sleep 7? No, I'm not going to do that because it's not comfortable for me. I feel tired and I don't want to learn how to overcome that. The generosity of the green flag of the North undermines that. Undermines that poverty mentality. It's like the person that's so wealthy, but they refuse to donate $100 because, well, that's $100. And I had to work 2.5 minutes to make that $100. Or I had to pick 7 numbers to get that $100. Which I now make every 10 minutes because I won $76 million. But hell no, I'll give you $20. How's that? Well, they go and they climb in their $300,000 car to drive back to their $2 million mansion. I've seen students like that. I've seen loads of them. My teacher's got a whole story about that. He had a student one time, drove a Ferrari every day. That was like his car. And my teacher kept telling him, who is absolutely poor. My teacher is like dirt poor. And basically was living on somebody's couch or his van. And that's what he did. And here he's got this student who drives around in a Ferrari. This student isn't like poor but happens to own a Ferrari. He owns a huge mansion in Malibu and happens to drive a Ferrari. And my teacher used to always tell him, you know, that, what the hell are you doing driving around a $250,000 car like that? I mean, the maintenance and the insurance alone has got to be killing you. And so one day the student came to my teacher and he goes, yeah, you know, I was thinking about it. You were totally right. It was just draining driving a car like that. So I sold it. And my teacher goes, oh, that's great. So what'd you do? And he goes, well, I bought 2 BMWs now. Or 2 Mercedes. And my teacher goes, oh, but did you happen to have anything left from that? Oh, yeah, I did. And, you know, I decided to redo one of the 9 bedrooms into, like, a gaming room. And my teacher goes, okay, that's cool, and goes back and lays down on the couch. See, we do that stuff all the time. All the time. And it's because our petty tyrant ego believes that we have this inalienable right to the things that we perceive that we own. And to study the green flag, the generosity, undermines that, because that actually is a very poor or poverty mindset. And once we begin to undermine that, we go into the center. And into the center, does anyone know what the blue flag of the center represents? Because that's what that blue flag is. That is the middle of the compass. It's the above and below. Anyone know?
Peace.
It is peace. And peace undermines a thing called aggression. Oftentimes they say anger, but really it means aggression. And it doesn't mean anger like you're pissed because somebody ate the last cookie and you got mad. We're not talking about that at all. The aggression that we're talking about is the total defense of what you perceive to be existing. It undermines the authority of your petty tyrant ego point of view. Which, when you do that, makes you incredibly peaceful. Because you can't be insulted. You cannot be offended. Because you have no point of reference to be offended. And so this is the 5 directions and the up and down that the Buddha says that this list refers to. They have assimilated themselves into this. And if you look at that scripture, it gives this little list there, and then it says it's because, what is the word, suffused?
Yeah, suffused.
They've suffused these trainings into their mind stream. They've made these wisdoms inseparable from themselves. And there's a way to train in all of them, because it's impossible. Listen, it is impossible for the deluded mind to fix itself. Delusion cannot fix delusion. That's why we have teachers. They're there to point out the clarity. So the traditional way of saying it is the teachers provide a basic sanity for those of us that are insane until we gain our sanity back. And at that time, we become one with the teacher. That's the point. Wow, I didn't even want to talk this long. What happened? That was not my plan at all. Actually, I thought that we were just going to meditate for half the service, and look what happened. All right, well, this is what happens when I get long-winded and I get into a... Sorry about that. Let's go to our closing prayers, because that's where we're at.